Welcome back. I'm Mark Steiner. Well, no, it's not quite the theme song of our Baltimore City Council. Could be one of the theme songs, though, I think.
I like it.
Why wouldn't you like it, right?
I like it.
So here we have in the studio, I just heard the voice of Councilman Brandon Scott, representing the 2nd District in Baltimore. Good to have you back in the studio, Brandon.
Thank you. Glad to be back.
Councilman Bill Henry, 4th District of Baltimore. Good to have you in the studio, brother.
Thanks, Mark. Great to be here.
I'm almost afraid to say how long I've known him. I knew him before he could walk. And now he's in the city council. What is that about?
Well,
okay,
hey.
Okay, now you and Mary Pat are going to fight over who's known me longer. And
I knew him when he... No, I didn't meet him until he was born. I'll say that much.
Councilman Mary Pat Clark, who represents the 14th District, is with us here. And we
good
have
morning.
Councilman Nick Mosby joining us by phone in the 7th District. Nick, good to have you with us.
Thanks for having me, Mark.
And folks, join us here at 410-319-8888. Write to us here at steinershow@gmail.com. Jump onto our Facebook pages, thoughts and questions for the city council members here. Or you can tweet us at Mark Steiner, however you would like to do this. And we would love to have you do that and just join us here. So let me begin. 410-319-8888 is the number. We do want you to join us. Please join us and let us know what's going on. And what your thoughts are for our city council members, 410-319-8888. Four of the 14 are with us. So, it's 14, right? How many are you?
15, including
15.
We have a president.
I wasn't counting him as the council, but that's true. So let's just start with this.
And we're not in violation of any rules right now.
No, we can't take
a
vote.
We're not all on the same committee.
Yeah. Right.
That's good, too.
So don't, nobody make a motion.
Let me jump right into this thing. We had a debate on this before, the last time Mary Pat was on the show. Oh. Which had to do with the bill that was
local hiring.
I'm getting there, Mary Pat.
Oh, I'm sorry.
There's a bill on local hiring, and the,
you know, when Mary Pat's here, you're only kind of the host.
I understand that. But the solicitor's office has said that this bill is unconstitutional. Most legal minds I've talked to said the bill is unconstitutional. That it will not stand muster.
We haven't been sued yet.
But that's not the point. The point is that people are saying it's unconstitutional. So if it is, and you are spending another $100,000 to hire an attorney, is this an exercise in futility when maybe there's some other ways to kind of force this issue other than this bill? Brandon, you were about to say something. Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say that I agree with the president, first and foremost, that we need our own lawyer, because everyone knows the situation with the council and the lawyer, and councils all over the country, including Baltimore County, have a separate lawyer than the rest of the municipality or their government.
But it's not a permanent attorney, is it?
No. In county, it is. The council has...
No, here, for Baltimore City.
Yes, he wants it to be a permanent
this
attorney.
Is not... He's not trying to hire an attorney
just
to defend this case.
Yeah. It's forever.
It's the fact that we, as a council...
Don't have our own lawyer.
Gotcha.
We're but almost to the point where we can finish each other's sentences all the time. But
that's a frightening thought. So go ahead, Brandon. You were saying.
But just to... But for the local hiring piece, for me... It's not just about a exercise of futility. It's about what we hear from the citizens every day, all day. What we hear from why do we have all these companies coming in from Pennsylvania to do everything from roads to building, and they're not hiring people from our communities. Mm-hmm. I think it's well worth the fight to stand up. Sometimes you have to stand up for people in order to have them feel and recognize that you care about them, but also that you want them to succeed. We have a lot of people in this city through a lot of the great programs that we've had, even from the Office of Employment Development, that are ready and willing to work, but people aren't hiring them. And I think that we should champion the president for bringing that to a head, and we should fight for our residents. We should try to see that. There are other places that haven't had their things thrown out or challenged. And maybe even through this, maybe through our standing up and through the fighting that we're all doing and all united, we all don't agree on much, but we all agree on this for the most part. Mm-hmm. Maybe we'll get something better out of a better deal for our residents out of that. So that's why I think it's well worth the fight.
And Nick, from the another voice from the young end of the council. Go ahead.
I totally agree.
We've elected some very young people in this last election.
This is one of those times where I wish we were on television.
I'm old. I'm not saying that.
You are old. Nick, now you're old.
Nick, go ahead.
So Mark, I'll try to keep point of order. But
please do.
No, I mean, everything that Brandon just kind of described and talked about is exactly on point. I mean, we know from some examples of other places that from a precedent perspective, what the city's faced and challenged. But I think what it does do is just bring this issue to the forefront. You know, I mean, you have places in the city. I mean, we talk about a 9% unemployment rate. You have places in the city where that rate is really 20 or 30 or 40%. And does much of that have to do with the availability of jobs? No, there's a lot of systemic issues that are plaguing our people and our communities. But the fact of the matter is, you know, when we host job fairs, when we see people at job fairs, you know, people are coming lined up ready to go. I mean, you know, once again, the systemic issues that are plaguing our communities, but then also getting over, you know, this economic downturn that we've seen throughout the entire country. So I just think it's the city council saying that, hey, we have the fortitude to come together about a critical issue that's not only plaguing West Baltimore, East Baltimore, but plaguing the entire city.
I have young men, for example, in my neighborhoods who stand on the corner. They have CDL licenses, which is a big deal. They have paid their – they've gone through the public school system, but they've paid to go to trade schools. They've gotten through them. They're standing on the corner. They can't get a job. One of the things I resent the most is when people say, well, you know, we can't find. I don't have to go looking for qualified young people in my district who don't have work and who would be an asset. This law, by the way, about unconstitutional, living wage, all right? When we first introduced it, and it was approved for, back in the early 90s in the city council, first living wage bill in the United States, city solicitor said, oh, that's unconstitutional. That you can't do that. Doesn't meet legal sufficiency. You can't do it. Now we overcame that. We had to change the bill and shrink it in order to get something passed. In the last term of the city council, when I introduced living wage for retail workers throughout the city of Baltimore, the city solicitor's office wrote an amazingly beautiful 3-page opinion about why it was something we were entitled legally to do. Things change. And so what we're saying is this is what works for our people in our city. It's 51% of the new hires a contractor with the city brings in. It's not even 100% of the new people he needs to do the contract. It's 51%. And it is a $5 million construction contractor hire. It's a $300,000 gidget or consulting contract or hire. It's very reasonable, and so it's unconstitutional. So sue us. Things change about what is and is not constitutional.
Mark, at the end of the day, we're talking about taxpayer money. This money came from the taxpayers of Baltimore City, and it should, if possible, be spent on the taxpayers of Baltimore City. And if we had to sit here and list all the good, right ideas that had been called unconstitutional and found constitutional right down the line, we'd have a whole other show.
So how much money are we talking about? I mean, in terms of city contracts, does anybody know exactly the amount of money? And we're talking about all the kinds of jobs. Has anybody done the research about money we're spending or the exact numbers of jobs we may be talking about in Baltimore? Is this just something?
Are you talking about the thresholds in the legislation? Are you talking about total spending?
No, I'm talking about what it means. If you say how many $5 million or more contracts are there, how many $300,000 or more contracts are there, how many people are we talking about, what kind of jobs are we talking about?
Most of our big contracts that are city contracts right now, and add jump in on more, have to do with reconstruction and repaving of infrastructure and of roads. We're not building a whole lot of new buildings per se.
But we got a lot of stuff underground that needs to be fixed.
But we got pipes around leaking backed up pipes, and that's huge in the millions a year. And then the repaving and reconstruction of roadbeds is also in the millions per year.
But we don't know what we're talking about exactly, do we?
I do not. The president's office probably has done the research, but I have not myself. Just, you know, he's the lead sponsor of the bill.
If you're interested, you should call Lester Davis at 410-396-4804.
Who's Lester Davis?
He's the man that's not speaking to Bill Henry.
he's Director of Communications for the President's Office.
We are going to take a very brief break and come right back. We're going to go out here. It's Tupac's birthday tomorrow.
Have a great
Tupac
weekend.
No, you're here for another half an hour. Guys, wait, please. And I Ain't Mad At You is coming out from Tupac Shakur. Tomorrow would have been his birthday, born in 1971. We'll be right back. But you still roll. Got stressed to YA and hit the hood swole. Remember when you had a Terry curl, didn't quite learn. On the block with your Glock, tripping off Sherm. Collect calls to the tilt, saying how you changed. Oh, you a Muslim now, no more dope game. Out of jail, California dreaming. Soon as I step on the scene, I'm hearing Hoochie screaming. Fiending for money and alcohol. The life of a West Side player with cows die and a strong ball. Only in Cali will we riot, not rally to live and die. In LA, we wear Tupac. Tupac would have been 42 years old today. Tupac Shakur. California Love. We're going to bring his songs in during each break just to remember Tupac Shakur. Today is tomorrow would have been his birthday. Still his birthday, but he would have been 42 years old. Councilman Brandon Scott's in the studio here, District 2, Councilman Bill Henry, District 4, Councilwoman Mary Pat Clark, District 14, and Councilman Nick Mosby, District 7, and you at 410-319-8888. So let me just conclude where we left off here before we talk about something else. You talked about the Public Safety Summit. We'll talk a bit about that coming up tomorrow here at Morgan State University. But I guess I asked that question earlier because it would be good, I think, Nick Mosby, for us to understand how much money we're talking about and what potential jobs we're talking about here in numbers. I mean, I think it's an important piece of legislation to have pushed through in terms of whether in terms of its reality being implemented or the symbolism of its being fought for. But it would be good if we knew what we were talking about, Nick. Nick, you still there?
Yeah, Nick.
Okay, go ahead, Bill.
Well, I can give you one example. There's a major construction project coming up in my district over the next 2 years. As a result of EPA requirements, we have to cover or somehow physically protect all of our open water drinking reservoirs. And so the Guilford Reservoir, instead of being completely open, the water in that, which is finished water, which goes directly into taps, is going to be put into cement tanks and buried underground. And that project is going to cost something in the range of $30 million. And that's one project. They're going to be doing similar projects at Ashburton and at Druid Lake. And by my understanding, the rule of thumb that the economic development people follow is that a $30 million project is a minimum of 300 construction jobs.
And Nick, so the census, one of the things we argued about in the show before when Mayor Pat was here last, just about this particular bill, I'm pro and con on both sides, was that the question of who would get these jobs in Baltimore. Some people would argue that there are all these skilled workers in Baltimore going without jobs, and but nobody can tell us. That's wonderful anecdotal information, but we don't have the real facts. We don't know who lives here, what they can do.
Well, because
this
bill is direct and clear enough that they'll find us. In other words, it's not hidden in some, it's not in some RFP that goes out that the Board of Estimates approves that. That's sort of inside city government. Once this takes effect, which it will soon, people will understand it easily, and they'll be able to go and sign up with the Mayor's Office of Employment Development to be in line to be one of the people that benefits.
Right now, this is a
layered type of thing. I mean, outside of just the in-your-face benefit of saying, hey, these are our public dollars, they should be spent on our people, and we know based off of study after study that those people are more likely to spend that dollar in their community. Outside of that apparentness being in your face is the fact that right now we're constantly talking about an aggressive plan of increasing our population and bringing folks back to the city. what other way of, you know, marketing a place is saying, hey, you know, last year, you know, the city of Baltimore spent, you know, X of millions of dollars. I mean, it's hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars on these types of jobs. And 51% of the employees associated with those jobs are Baltimore residents. I mean, it shows folks that, hey, the city's working, the city's progressing, but it's not just us as a city and a municipality from an infrastructure progressing. It's also our citizenry. So I just think that it's there's too many things out there, you know, to benefit the city from a holistic perspective. It's a win-win for all.
So, folks, we want to hear from you, 410-319-8888, when we debated this subject a couple weeks back with Mayor Pat Clark in the studio. Phones were off the hook, especially those of you looking for work. Talk about what this means to you, whether you think this bill should be passed or not. I mean, whether this should be implemented or not. 410-319-8888 is the number here, because the mayor is kind of stepping away from this completely. Wow.
She's not going to let it become law without signing.
Oh, she's not signing it.
Yeah.
Which means,
but if the mayor really believed that it was wrong and that we couldn't or shouldn't do it, the mayor is empowered to veto it.
But let's talk about
you talked about the mayor's office of employment development. Karen Sitnick and the people at MOED, they work really hard to try to connect all the people in Baltimore who need jobs with the positions that are out
there.
The
casino is a good example.
They work really hard, but at the end of the day, without this law, all they had to use to deal with the contractors were goals and targets and a lot of things which look really good when you've got them in boldface, up in bullet points on a PowerPoint. But at the end of the day, if a contractor made a good faith effort to find people in Baltimore City and somehow wasn't able to find just the right people for the job, they were free to go get the people that they were used to using who weren't necessarily from Baltimore City. And this law now says you have a hard number that you have to hit, or there will be actual legal and financial penalties, and that's the stick that MOED hasn't had to use on the contract.
So contractor,
Go ahead, Nick, and then Brandon, and then Mary, Pat. To jump in real quick, just and level set expectations regarding the legislation. It is a hard ask, but there are also the president has also put other contingencies in the bill, like if you are in good faith, have gone out, tried to do the hiring, but maybe there was a subject matter expertise that you were unable to find that skill set in the city of Baltimore. Like, say, if you needed a underwater scuba diver with, you know, this degree and that experience of doing something in the harbor, there are ways around it where you will not be penalized as an employer who's going out and needing of this specific skill set. So I think the bill has tried to be as flexible as possible to say, you know, for the jobs that we have folks in the city that can do, you know, you should have 51% hiring. But there's also contingencies put in place for those with subject matter expertise that we might not find. Maybe we need to go out to, you know, California because, you know, it's that type of industry that's out there and bring someone to Baltimore. So I just want to make sure that we level set expectations associated with the legislation.
That's an important point, Brandon.
And just to add on to what Councilman Henry was saying, for me, for example, this is how I bring it home. I gave the keynote speech on Wednesday night at the Youth Opportunity graduation. 99 young people who grew up in the city who took a different route to their education. They had issues ranging from having kids to family issues, economic, whatever. But these are young people who came back and got an education simply because they want to go to work. And Youth Opportunity, and I'm a Youth Opportunity graduate, Youth Opportunity, what they do at MOED and Youth Opportunity is that they use relationships to get these young people jobs. But they have to work very, very hard to do so because there's a lot of stigmatism around these young people in the city who grew up, even though they can do the work. And basically they have places that always take them, but they also have places that shut the door in their face. This legislation would open more doors for people who are trying to work in the city. It's not going to open every door, but the more doors that are open, the better. The more people that are working, the better in this city.
And Mark, if I could piggyback off Brandon's point, I think it's great to look at it from like a immediacy of, okay, Mark, tomorrow we have 100 jobs and we have 100 folks to fill those jobs. But what's more important, it critically sets the precedence for the role down the future. I mean, for far too long, for many decades in our city, we've done nothing but produce, underdeveloped, underemployed individuals. This forces the educational system. This forces the corporate entity and the businesses associated with the city to ensure that our folks and our children are properly trained for the jobs of tomorrow's future. So, I think it's great for us to look at it right away, like what it does and expedient jobs to folks who need jobs. But I think what it does is, sets generational growth and progression up for our young folks that are growing up in the future to properly prepare them for the jobs of tomorrow.
So, yeah, that's a good point because, for example, I believe the police department has an over $300,000 contract to do management activities.
Don't get me started.
Well, but that's the kind of contract that would be covered so that any 51% of new hires to help with that contract would have to be Baltimore City people. And I'm sorry that there's a way to duck out of this, and I hope that the city will not make it easy to do.
How could that happen, Mary Pat?
Well, the kinds of, if you can't find anybody, and we will understand. That's been the problem. The people are here. You can't find them if you're sitting in, I don't know, Cockeysville, looking at a piece of paper and trying to put your MBE, WBE subcontractors together.
So the question I have, that's what I was trying to say earlier before.
They're here.
Let me stop. Let me
say this question. Oh, Mark.
What?
Put your hands down. I have stopped talking.
No, I'm saying this because, in all seriousness,
I'm serious.
Because we keep saying, you keep saying, other people keep saying, this people with skills and have these skills are here.
Yes.
And what I keep saying is, maybe they are, and maybe they're not. And we don't know. You make assumptions.
Because we don't have the data.
You don't have the data.
But we have the law now, and they will follow the law. They will come to us.
Mary Pat, this is something, I understand what you're saying, but this is what I agree with Mark, and this is something that I know you guys get tired of hearing me say, is that in the city, we have to get better at keeping data on our residents, especially on our younger residents.
Because, I don't get tired of hearing you say
that. Yeah, because we don't know. Like, we have people, and I'll just use a random example. We have people that run after-school programs at rec centers where kids are struggling in reading, and they don't know because the school doesn't share the information with the rec center. And the same thing is for adults and how they work. We have to get better at doing that. That you'll get no argument from me. But we know that we have them, but it gives us more standing if we can show that we have them. If we know how many people are licensed carpenters or licensed this, licensed that, if we can show
that. We should be able to know that.
The union
should know how many people in Baltimore City are union members.
We should pull that data from them.
We can pull
the data from them.
We know union membership. We don't have it with us this morning. But unions have discriminated also. Some of them have, and they've changed their ways. But it's not just who's in a union. It's also who's skilled. Mm-hmm. So basically, Mark, you could say that about Montgomery County. You could say that about Prince George's. You could say it about any place that we don't know in our city who has what skills and abilities. And so bill does is say, we got these contracts. If you, we 51% of the new hires have to be city residents. If you are, come and register at the Mayor's Office of Employment Development so that you're notified when contracts are bid.
And you were saying, Nick?
I was just saying, once again, to your point, Mark, no, we don't know, nor do we have the hard numbers. But what I can say is for a healthier Baltimore tomorrow and to ensure the generations of the past that have been forgotten and lost from an underdevelopment perspective, this type of policy helps shape that. I mean, this has a residual impact on our neighborhoods and our communities where folks are growing up and not properly prepared for the jobs of tomorrow. in Baltimore City. I mean, when you look at the deindustrialization of the city of Baltimore, and when those industries collapsed and many folks were out without the skill sets for the future of Baltimore, I mean, that's what we're doing when we look at the whole STEM movement. I mean, a report came out, I believe, 2 or 3 days ago, 25% of the jobs in, you know, the Baltimore metropolitan area are STEM focused.
So let me jump here because I just realized that we have callers. I didn't know because something's wrong with our computer system and I'm not seeing them on my screen. Let me know the name and we'll go right to the caller. Just type in his name and or her name. And let's go to Rodney, 410-319-8888. Rodney, you're on the air. Rodney, welcome. You're on the air.
Hey, Mark, how are you? This is Rodney Burris of the State Central Committee.
Oh, good to have you with us.
Hello?
You're on the air, Rodney.
Hey, I just wanted to say very quickly, I have many people in my district that are very much in support of this jobs bill. We've been talking about this in a few meetings, a couple of PTO groups, and people love it, and they love the idea that if it's something that's going to be challenged, that we should fight it, that we should definitely champion it. So I think this is something that will build solidarity and build consensus and also a morale builder for the city. Definitely in support of it.
All right.
Thank you. Go ahead, and then we'll go back to the phones. Go ahead.
Yeah, I just want to say, and Mark, you know, I have a policy background. I agree with you. In an ideal world, we would make these kind of decisions only after we had looked through all the numbers and we could clearly demonstrate that this choice is going to have a better outcome than that choice. But here's the thing. We don't always have that opportunity. Sometimes we just need to accept the fact that the status quo is bad and we have to do something different if we're going to have a chance of making it better. Maybe it won't work. I mean, I'll be the first to acknowledge that maybe there is not going to be the best outcome out of this. But right now we already know that things are bad and people are out of work. And Baltimore needs jobs, so let's try something.
I am not opposed to what the council is trying at all. I mean, I think that we have to put people to work here in this town, and it's absurd. I'll bring another issue with that. I'm just pushing to put certain facts on the table to see where we are, because I want that to happen. Unemployment's ridiculous, especially our poor working class neighborhoods. It's just off the roof, and it can't be allowed to stay the way. I don't disagree with you all, but I think that we have to answer some questions to make it work. 410-319-8888. Mike, you're on the air. Mike, you're on the air. Welcome.
Hello. Thanks for taking the call. First of all, I'm away from my radio, so if you could keep me on the line while folks are responding.
Sure, man. Go ahead. No problem.
So two things that I wanted to bring up, completely unrelated.
All right.
One is I've been really curious and appalled learning of the close relationship between Lisa Harris-Jones and Mayor Rawlings Blake. It's something that I've been aware of for a while, but I know a lot of city council hasn't been willing to comment on that relationship. And in general, the very close relationships between kind of the legal offices in Baltimore and that act as consultants for developers and as lobbyists and the political class in Baltimore. So I'd like to hear folks comment on that and their perspectives on, for example, Rawlings Blake celebrating or officiating over the wedding of Lisa Harris-Jones and whatever that guy's name is. And then the second thing, the totally
Sean unrelated Malone.
Thing.
Sean Malone, yes.
The totally unrelated thing is for the last half year or so, I've been bicycling to work, and I've had the advantage of having bicycle paths to take me basically from my house to the place where I'm working. But one thing that I've recently realized is how discouraging the parking provisions are that say that you have to move your vehicle every 48 hours in the city.
Yes.
So I found myself recently getting two tickets in my neighborhood because I pretty much only use the car on the weekends and bicycle during the weekdays. So I've gotten two tickets really as a result of being able to bicycle to work.
You have a neighbor that's calling 311.
Yeah. Well, so, but let's talk about this. So I think that this is both these issues. One, you can hold on the line, Mike, while they answer since you're not by the radio. But let's start with your second question first, and we'll go to your first question. Second,
Mary Pat hit the nail on the head. You have
Brandon Scott.
He has a neighbor that's calling in. But what I would say to you is that there's a ways around it. Simply, if you just go and move
your car
a half an inch or a half a foot, they won't. As long as the wheels break
or switch the side of the street,
then you'll be fine. Because what we have is, and actually we're close to where we are here at Morgan State. I'm getting complaints about a guy who runs a car dealership on the northwest side of town, but he's bringing cars and he's parking them on his street. and leaving them there, and the people are calling and they're getting tickets. So it's a give and a take when you have people like that, but then you have this gentleman that is not doing the wrong thing per se.
But man, I just have a question on it, because I, yep. I hear what he's saying. I'm just curious why this is. I mean, I hear what you're saying about move your car a couple inches, but if you live in Baltimore City and you park your car in front of your house, why do you have to move it in the first place? What is that? Where did that come from? Why is that even a law?
That spot in front of your house isn't your spot.
That's not the point. Your point is that you live in a house. Right. I live here. I can't park my car in front of my house for 3 or 4 days while I'm going to take my bicycle without having to move it? That's ridiculous.
Well, one thing
is, does that make any sense?
It's how we find stolen cars.
Oh, come on. Look.
Really?
Look.
That's not why the law. I have no idea why the law.
Why do we have a law that says a human being?
The law was written before I was born.
So why should
the law was written before I was born?
So why don't repeal the law?
Well, it's but this is the thing.
Who wants it there?
Because it's
the city, so they can make more money on tickets.
A lot of citizens. This is one of the things I get the most calls about. Believe it or not, Marcus. That this person hasn't moved their car. The car's been sitting there. The tire's going flat.
Try that person to get a life.
No,
I understand what you're saying, but
there has to be a way for us to respond to those complaints of cars that are there for a while.
I don't want
to
hear that, but I do.
Mark, you're looking at it from the perspective of
a citizen who has a car in front of his house.
Hear me out. You're looking at it from the perspective of somebody who parked their car in front of their house. Why did they have to move it? What I'm telling you is, what if while you're at work, somebody else parks their car in front of your house and leaves it there for a week and a half?
This neighborhood is the perfect example.
Yeah.
Because
happens here all the time.
Mary Pat has been fighting this. Bobby Kern has been fighting this. Bill has been fighting this with the students at Morgan. Park their cars in front of Ms. Johnson's house on Cold Spring.
So you get a ticket because it's a one-hour limit.
No. Ticket for what?
No, not all.
I got a ticket there when I parked. I couldn't get in the lot one day.
Well, that's because it's you.
Listen. Not that it doesn't go all the way up. They go further up now where there is no limit, time limit parking.
No,
and they'll
RPP.
Leave their car, no RPP, and they'll leave their car there. And if Mary Pat or Bill or Bobby gets a call about Miss Johnson and this student from Morgan left their car there 3 days ago,
it's
and they're still
3 days,
there,
Mary.
I own this house. They don't own this house. It's everywhere in the city. It's different. In my district, I don't really get the call unless it's a disabled vehicle
I've lived two blocks from Loyola University for 19 years now, and every couple of years, somebody coming to visit a student over winter break or spring break
parks
their car up the street in front of our house and leaves it there while they're visiting.
Let me switch gears here. And
and I've had two of them ticketed.
I hear you. Okay, look, I was just throwing it out.
Those are all the reasons why.
Okay. Yeah. Some of them.
So let me ask his first question, then we'll go back to the phones.
But he's being picked on by his neighbor.
Yeah, pretty much.
Some neighbor.
People just have nothing better to do sometimes than just make calls. But,
amen.
Good Lord. But I think Mike's other question was really one that people talk about. Is the cozy relationship between people like Lynn Harris-Jones and the mayor Lisa Harris-Jones and lobbyists in Baltimore who come out of city government, become lobbyists like they do in Annapolis, and that relationship, and people are concerned about those relationships, should they not be?
Here's what I'll say. I've been on the council for 5.5 years. I've lived in Baltimore for almost 45. There are lots of people that I was already friends with before I became a council person, mm-hmm. and they became whatever they are now. As much as it's important that we maintain a professional and ethical
relationship,
that you can't stop knowing people. I've known Lisa since high school. You know, and that doesn't mean that I'm gonna treat her clients differently when they've got a bill in committee. Okay. She knows. Sometimes I'm completely on the other side of where she is, and sometimes I'm
and
not.
Actually, and for me, actually, when it is someone, you know, it makes it easier. I can just tell, you know, if it's my friend, I can just say, shut up, leave me alone. You know,
that's
it makes
really
it
true.
Exactly.
That's the truth.
Yeah,
it's
you don't
truth.
Have to be polite.
You know, I don't have to be polite with them because they know how you are. They understand you, and you can just tell them. You don't have to be nice with them.
Let me chime in. First of all, I read that
article the longest.
What? let me chime in and say this. Look, I read that article all about the going to Rehoboth.
Wedding.
All right, the mayor paid to stay at one of her best friend's houses because the best friend is a lobbyist duly registered by law with the city of Baltimore as a lobbyist. And it's just what Bill Henry says. People grew up here. We want people in charge of city government who know what the heck they're doing.
But let me just ask this. I mean, Nick, but what Mary Pat just said, just, I mean, like, fine, I'm a city council person or mayor, or whatever I may be. My friend,
that would be so cool.
Yeah, come on up. Now you're talking about a front page story.
So Nick, the question is, so my friend's a lobbyist. And I go to the wedding. I understand officiating your friend's wedding. That didn't bother me as much as
And I didn't understand why it bothered anybody.
That wasn't a big deal. But to me,
the wedding part bothered me.
Just like Mayor Dixon shouldn't take coats from somebody.
Let me finish.
Oh, coats.
Coats, C-O-A-T-S, okay. Coats from somebody who does business with the city. Should the mayor be staying in a lobbyist home, whether she's her friend or not, given the proprietary issues that she has to deal with?
She paid to stay there.
If she's paying,
the coats were free.
Wait, I asked Nick.
That's Nick.
Mark, if she's paying fair market value for that service or for whatever she's getting,
it makes sense because a man said it.
No, that's not why. Because I'm trying to give everybody equal say on the show because he's on the phone and you're not.
Nick, this isn't about you. This is about Mark.
Nick, is that you, Nick?
He had to hear what I said from a male person before he finally understood that it made sense.
She's being coached by my wife and Stephanie Maronis all this
morning. I don't need to be coached. I was born.
Point of order.
Oh, okay, Nick. Go ahead, Nick. We got it.
No, I was just saying that, if she's paying fair market value for that service, then it's just like anyone else. It's not like she's taking advantage of a relationship or the position that she's in. So, if you want to go up and spend and pay $400 for the weekend like she's charged anybody else in the past, why can't you as her friend or even as a family member?
My daughter went to school with the mayor, and they were pals. And now my daughter's children go to school at Mount Washington with the mayor's daughter. So
it's a small town. It's hard.
It's hard not to have a connection.
When people come on, the difficult thing about pushing people on my show sometimes is I know so many people growing up in the city that who you like as a human being, but you think what they did needs to be pushed, so you push it.
Mike, the caller, just wrote in though.
He said it's a matter of equal access in terms of who has the power to talk to a council member, who has the power to talk to a mayor. Was his comment?
Well, I think that's a good point that he makes, and.
He says the mayor seems to loathe citizen input.
I would take exception to that, but equal access is an issue always.
And I don't think that they loathe citizen input. They take input and actually now a multitude of ways that they didn't before. Right. Interaction with the agencies and things like that.
So we have a lot of people calling in. We want to get these calls. We're going to take a brief break and come right back. You're here for another 15 minutes.
Yes.
And then we will take a break and talk about with some teachers who are upset with where the city schools are going. They're going to come talk to us for a bit. We'll talk to Kashawn Cooper about fathers and meet the voice of Hollywood, Marnie Nixon, all coming up in the next hour. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Something for my godson Elijah and a little girl named Corinne. Say the black of the bed, the sweet of the juice. I say the dark of the flesh and the deep of the roots. I give a holler to my sister's own welfare. Tupac kids, if don't nobody else care. And I know they like to beat you down a lot. When you come around the block, brothers clown a lot. But please don't cry, dry your eyes, never let up. Forgive, but don't forget, girl, keep your head up. And when he tells you you ain't nothing, don't believe him. And if you can't learn to love you, you should leave him. I hear Brenda's got a baby, but Brenda's barely got a brain. A damn shame, the girl can hardly spell her name.
That's not our problem, that's up to Brenda's family.
Well, let me show you how it affects our whole community. Now, Brenda really never knew her moms, and her dad was a junkie putting death into his arms. It's sad, cause I bet Brenda doesn't even know. Just cause you're in the ghetto doesn't mean you can't grow. But, that's a book, my own.
Tupac Shakur, Brenda's having a baby. He would have been 42 years old tomorrow. We're playing his songs all through the next hour, and spent his time in Baltimore, my student at School for the Arts, Tupac Shakur. We're here with four of our city council people. Councilman Brandon Scott in the studio, District 2, Councilman Bill Henry, District 4, Councilwoman Mary Pat Clark, District 14, Councilman Nick Mosby, District 7, 410-319-8888. Going to go to Kathleen in a second, but let me just raise this issue because we don't have time to really get into it today. But I do want you back to talk about this, even though when I walked out to the lobby to get you in, you said, this is not our issue, but it is your issue. And I'm curious what the council thinks when all our elected officials and our appointed officials so far, and elected officials in Baltimore, from the mayor to the state's attorney, city council, president of city council, and others, state delegates, period, all of them, don't have anything to say when a marijuana report comes out from the ACLU, Brandon. I know you got a role, so I'm going to throw it to you first. When the city council report comes out from the ACLU saying that Baltimore and Maryland are two of the worst offenders in America for arresting disordinate amounts of black people for marijuana use when, like teenagers, 98% of all the kids in Baltimore, underage kids, 18 years and younger, kids arrested for marijuana are black.
Right.
Like no white kids smoke marijuana in Baltimore? I don't think any of them should be arrested, but I'm saying that this is, and what is your role as a city council person to address this?
Well, for me, Mark, and actually we've talked about this. I've been on your show talking about racial profiling before. To me, and I told my colleagues this, I think that this issue, especially around marijuana, but around racial profiling as a whole, we have to stop looking at it as just a government and a people issue. It has to be looked at as a community issue because I'm in the age range of the people that are disproportionately arrested in our city, right? But also, as I know that I think it's stupid for young guys that look like me that are being arrested for hamping a blunt or a little bit of weed or this or that. But I do know that though people don't know it or accept it or realize it, there's a lot of violence in our city that's tied around marijuana these days. It's shocking to me, even to me, for someone who grew up here in the 90s and saw, you know, violence on violence on violence. You know, I can think of incidents in the last week that I know where violence was around marijuana.
But the violence comes from people dealing drugs.
Right. But also
and the majority of people being in our city jails, locked up in our juvie, are just there for small amounts of marijuana.
Right, which makes no sense.
Not for toting guns,
but this is where,
threatening other human beings.
This is where I go back to the issue of the community, and to be quite honest, it's a generational issue, right? Like I said before, when we had the other two gentlemen on there, since I represent that neighborhood that the gentleman lived in, Bella Edison, when I go to the community meetings, Mary Patton, I'm not picking on you, people that look like me but are Mary Pat's age range are constantly complaining to me, and they're constantly
make it to the meeting.
Right. And constantly complaining to the police about the young guys smoking weed. And they're the ones that are calling the police on the young guys smoking weed.
A lot of it is.
Let me back Brandon
up
on this. Here's the thing. We all go to community meetings. We all go to various rallies and workshops and all sorts of things.
Everybody picks on the young people.
Where we talk about how the children are the future, and it's important to do good things for the youth. But then the problem is, and I hear this at community meetings, in church halls, and in school cafeterias, when people go home at night and they look out their window
and they see three or four
young people standing on the corner,
they call the police.
They do not call the mayor's office and say, we need more after-school programs.
Right.
We need more nighttime basketball. But they call the police and they say, get these kids off my corner.
When
the police go to those kids, if those kids have a blunt in their pockets, a recreational level amount, they get arrested, and that's the problem.
That's not the grand thing.
Nick?
Yeah, but the point of this discussion is not around, well, you know, the fact that these guys have small amount of marijuana. The point is the activity that we're doing as it relates to finding them. We titled this campaign The War on Drugs. It's never really been a war on drugs.
It's been a war on poor people.
It's been a war on poor people and folks that look like me, young men and women around this country in every urban epicenter in America. I mean, statistically proven, and I'm pretty sure we've all heard of the book over and over again, the new Jim Crow. But statistically proven, you know, from a racial perspective, you know, African Americans or whites are just as likely to use and sell drugs. But unfortunately, there's a huge disparity in this country as it relates to the folks who are getting arrested, the folks who are detained, and the policies around the types of drugs in our urban centers. So I think this is more, this discussion is much larger than Ms. Johnson seeing guys on the corner
smoking
weed and calling the police. This is really about fundamental and institutionalized policies that have unfortunately shaped, you know, the penitentiary system that we see today.
So, I agree. So let me ask you a question. What, Nick, what you're saying, Nick, so Nick, my quick question, I'm going to go to Kathleen. I know you got a role here, Brandon, but should, I know the city council can't manage the police department, nor our courts. But
why is everybody looking at me?
What, but the city council, it's in all seriousness, the city council, though, Nick, could call a hearing around this report, bring the state's attorney in, bring the mayor in, bring the head of the police in, bring state legislators in to testify and talk about what you do to respond to this report as the citizens' representatives, Nick.
We can do
that. Should be your job, right?
We can do that.
Mark, I totally agree, and I'm pretty sure that topic has already been reserved from a legislative reference perspective. I was just trying to shake the discussion around.
Right.
At the end of the day, this is much bigger than youths being rounded up on the corners and taken to jail. This is about an institutionalized practice that's been there for generations that's centered around a lot of economy of the city of Baltimore. I mean, when we talk about industry in the city of Baltimore, you know, one would argue that, oh, it's the hospital, you know, industry. But no, it's the illegal drug trade. And
right.
It's not just the young guys who are risking their lives, the real casualty of this fake war on the corners. It's the money that's built up from police officers to lawyers to judges to CEOs. I mean, that's a real industry in the city, unfortunately, in many cities like Baltimore around the country. And we need to break that cycle of becoming dependent on this fake war on drugs.
Right, and I just one last comment before I have to skedaddle. I agree with everything what Nick is saying, but I think that what we do in the city, we always just make it about the we have to make it about the people, our community, and the policy. It has to be all. I agree with everything he's saying. It has to be all together. Everybody has to realize that it's a multitude of things. It's a multifaceted. It's a multifaceted thing. Because if I see a young guy standing outside my house, I'm going to go outside and tell him, "Hey, look, you can do what you do, but you got to do it at home. You can't do it in front of where I live." But my neighbor might not do that, and then that allows that police officer.
Right, but I think the danger, Brandon, what you're doing is you can't put this on the backs of citizens.
No, I'm not putting it on the backs of citizens.
Policy we're talking about here.
We're talking about policy, but we're also talking about a mindset of a community, especially the black community, where we have generations before me, they look at us like we're the problem. We have to get over that.
I need to go back to the phones here. Look, people are calling in like crazy. So let me go to Kathleen first, and then we go to Tabby. Kathleen, you're on the air very quickly.
Uh-huh.
Hi, Kathleen. You're on the air.
Hi. How are you?
Very well.
My question was concerning promoting small businesses within the city that are minority businesses, and that these minority businesses, while it's okay for them to be subs, no program in the city is pushing having these people having these businesses become prime. And they hire overwhelmingly citizens of Baltimore City. And while it is very good, the program, to be sub, you don't make your real money until you become prime. And it's become so complicated and so convoluted and so difficult to compete because of the size of the firms you're competing against for very small work. And I think a lot of the problem could be alleviated simply by just supporting and promoting more local minority businesses, especially contractors.
If I can jump out there, Mark, real quick.
Go ahead, Nick.
I think when you look around the country and some of the places that have been able to be successful partners of growing minority participation in their places, their efforts have always been intentional. And, you know, when you look at a place like Atlanta with a Maynard Jackson and, you know, just the whole airport thing, and I know we've all heard that example over and over again, you know, all those types of things were really intentional. And unfortunately, in front of our minority contractors and women business enterprise establishments, is an issue about bond rating. But at the end of the day, it seems like we can develop programs to intentionally look at where a person currently is. You know, they've done great work, they've done great small work, but now let's intentionally develop a way where they will have the skill set, they will have the access to grow their business and potentially compete for larger bonds in the future. Now, we can continue to try to stumble our way through this thing, but that type of structure, that type of program, it has to be intentional. Other places have done it, and, you know, I look for the disparity study that's coming out. I believe it's going to come out in the next 5 months, you know, as being like the first base of getting there. But it has to be developed and pushed intentionally. So I do understand where the last call is calling from. And, you know, I just still think it's ridiculous when we see RFPs come out from a city like Baltimore, as diverse and colorful as we are, with a 5% NWE goal. Like, to me, that just doesn't make sense in 2013.
So, Mary Pat, did you have something to say about this?
No.
Oh, I thought you did.
I'm sorry. I missed the first part because I was forced to leave the studio for a moment.
I didn't do that, by the way. I did not force Mary Pat to leave
the
studio.
No, not at all. I just needed to. Yes.
Mark did not throw Mary Pat out of the studio.
I would never do that.
If he had, he would have
been out
there with me.
Point of order. Point of order. Point of order.
Thank you.
Next caller.
Do we have time for another caller here? 410-319-8888. We don't? All right. Tabby, you're on the air. Very quick thought. Tabby, you're on the air. Very quick thought.
The problem is the quality of life for me. Am I entitled to the peaceful, quiet enjoyment of my home? It affects property values.
Yes.
We are stuck here. We can't sell our homes because of what they're doing in our communities. So while I want to be empathetic, it also affects me personally and affects me emotionally and financially. So what do these young boys have us stuck in a vice?
Well, if I could address
thought.
This, here's the thing. Here's the real challenge for our neighborhoods is distinguishing between the young men on the corner who are engaged in illicit activity and the young men on the corner who have nowhere else to go and nothing else to do. And the problem is we have a tendency to assume all of them are the former.
And you've had the last word for today. I want to thank Councilman Bill Henry, District 4, Councilwoman Mary Pat Clark, District 14, Councilman Nick Mosby, District 7, and Councilman Brandon Scott, District 2, for joining us. It's been a great discussion, y'all. Thank you so much for coming in.
Sure. Thank you.
And we'll see you all soon. Our council roundtable should continue on a regular basis. Stay tuned. Don't go away. We're going to come right back. We're about to go out with, Tupac's Panther Power and come back in with Iris Kirsch, a city school teacher, talking about what they are fighting about for city teachers and students. To get us locked up, shut up and back and change. Who denies us the future? Rob our name, kept my history a mystery, but now I see the American dream wasn't meant for me. Cause Lady Liberty's a hypocrite, she lied to me. Wallace for freedom, education, equality never gave me nothing but.